You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. It's really good to have John Rubino with us once again. It's dollarcollapse.com for John's excellent website. He writes some things there himself, but he also has a lot of great material from other writers. And one of my favorite things that he provides is his top 10 videos of the week. I seldom have time to watch all of them. Hardly get a chance to watch more than one or two of them, but they're always excellent. There's lots of great material at dollarcollapse.com. Thanks for joining me again, John.
Hey, Jay, good to be back. Yeah, you had something in the top 10 list this week.
Oh, I did.
Your Alistair McLeod interview.
Oh, well, Alistair is always good, and he's going to be with me in a couple of weeks again. So, we have a lot of great guests like yourself, and there's a lot of great people out there, and it's a lot of fun listening to what other people have to say, that's for sure. And so let's start with what you have to say today, John. And I'd like to talk about an article that you recently wrote called Remember Strikes. Well, I'm a little older than you are, John, but I remember very well as a young adult the strikes that were going on in the 70s. And it was the 1970s were a very difficult time. We had rising inflation, very significant double digit inflation that could have been heading to something much worse. It was choked off by Paul Volcker in 1980. But talk to us a little bit about your article, Remember Strikes. I mean, we're starting to see a large number of strikes again taking place, and I would also argue, work slowdowns. We had to wait a week for our garbage to get picked up here in New York City. I think a lot of people protesting the forced vaccinations and so forth. It's really a big deal. But maybe just sort of give our listeners the picture of your article, Remember Strikes.
Well, Jay, you and I grew up in a very different time in terms of labor and versus capital and everything. There was a much better balance back then. There was a shortage of good workers, and companies had to pay up for them. And because of that, the workers were able to bargain collectively, and if they had to go on strike. I was a member of the United Steelworkers Union.
Yes, I learned that. Yeah.
and we went on strike one time. So it was that kind of a world. And today, how many millennials do you think are union members and have gone on a successful strike? Very few, right? Because the power has shifted because of globalization away from labor and towards capital. And instead of being benevolent aristocrats, the guys who own the factories and the robots and everything have been like brutal dictators. They basically shut down factories in the U.S. and most of the rest of the developed world, shifted that work to places where workers make a buck an hour or whatever, and there are no real environmental restrictions or safety restrictions or anything, and that took the power away from today's workers. So they no longer have the ability to bargain, or they, until very recently, they didn't have the ability to bargain for better pay or better working conditions. So the rich got richer and richer, and everybody else either stayed the same or got poorer. The bottom 50% of this country economically is less well off than they were 40 years ago. You can trace a lot of our current troubles to that growing disparity between the rich and the poor. Now, it's starting to shift back the other way, finally, at long last, because you really can't have the trend of the rich getting richer continue forever, because the poor outnumber them 10 to 1, and so eventually the pendulum has to swing back the other way. And it's starting to now. You see all these help wanted signs everywhere you look. And now McDonald's apparently has set their minimum wage for burger flippers at $21 an hour.
Incredible.
Yeah. And that is basically permanent. You're not going to see them go, next year, say, oops, we're going to move you back down to 12 bucks an hour. That's not the way things work. So that's a very good thing in a lot of ways, because it means the you know, the people who work with their hands, which is the vast majority of the country, are getting some back that had been taken from them over the past few decades. And that, you know, it's a good thing, but it's also a very complicated thing economically, because the Fed, when it's calculating inflation, does not count stocks, bonds, and real estate. Those things can go up to infinity, and the Fed doesn't count that as inflation because those are the things that are owned by the rich. Therefore, it's a good thing when they go up. Yeah. But wages going up sends up a red flag for the Fed. They consider that to be inflation, and they consider it to be a signal that they need to tighten. Yeah. And we're kind of there now. The Fed is meeting this week. They're apparently sending out signals that they're at least going to start tapering. In other words, they're going to start shrinking their balance sheet to get rid of all the assets that they've bought with newly created currency over the last few years, and that they're looking at raising interest rates pretty soon. So that's going to, well, if history is any kind of a guide, that will give us extreme financial market volatility going forward. Mm-hmm. So it's not clear how long the trend of workers being able to demand higher wages will last if we have a giant equities bear market, for instance, or the bond market flakes out. So things get very complicated very soon, I think.
Yeah, they do. And this reminds me, though, of a conversation that Daniel DiMartino Booth had with Adam Taggart in an interview that I think I mentioned to you. And then I noticed today on your website, you have another article, Another Effect of Rising Wages. And subtitle here, well, I see another part of this article. I think it's part of this article. Yeah, it is. McDonald's enters a strategic partnership with IBM to automate drive-through lanes. So, I mean, are we looking at Danielle DiMartino Booth is saying, well, a lot of people just think that the corporation is going to roll over and just pay these people whatever they want. She says it doesn't work that way, that they are already spending huge amounts of money for, you know, IT and AI, artificial intelligence and automation of various kinds to eliminate the workers. So maybe the first time it was done by sending jobs overseas to poor countries, and now maybe it's going to be done by robots and other sort of automated technologies that are emerging.
Yes. Well, that's another effect of rising wages. You know, it'll lead the Fed to raise interest rates, and it also leads companies to try to automate as much work as possible when the cost of that work is going up in their human workforce. And, you know, we'll definitely see that. See, things were going to be automated in any event. Robots were going to do most of the repetitive work eventually. Mm-hmm. But to the extent that wages are going up, that accelerates the process. So, yeah, we'll see. At least for the next few years, companies will pay whatever they have to do their business and get the orders out the door, right? But they're not going to pay really high wages any longer than they have to if they can automate a lot of this stuff. And you know, artificial intelligence and robotics have reached the point where a lot of stuff can be done that couldn't be done before. You know, look at those videos of the dancing robots from Boston Dynamics. Those things are terrifying. I mean, they're really cute, but you know, would you want to get into a fight with something like that? Something that agile and that strong? No. And so that's our future. You know, these things, that's the future of warfare for sure. And it's the future of a lot of basic industry as well. Mm-hmm. And see, you know, it's just so interesting what's happening now, because we have really low birth rates in the U.S. And one group of economists are terrified that there won't be enough workers to support all the retirees in the future. At the same time, we've got automation accelerating like this, and another group of economists are terrified that there won't be enough jobs for what workers remain. And so who knows how this plays out exactly, but you know, it could be in an ideal world, we find a perfect balance where lower birth rates mean fewer workers, but there are exactly enough jobs left over that the robots aren't doing for those people. I doubt if it works out that way, but
yeah. Well, we can hope, but I could just mention that over the lunch hour, Henry Kissinger was on Neil Cavuto talking about, I guess he's written a book about this, and he's very, very worried about what it's going to do to the human race in terms of it's moving so fast. Technology is growing almost exponentially, that the knowledge and the power of technology, and his concern is that the humans may lose autonomy to robots. And, of course, that's a subject for another day. But a fascinating subject, and I mean, Henry Kissinger has got to be getting up in the years. I don't know exactly how old he was. He was obvious, his age is showing, but he's still obviously a brilliant mind, like him or not, and just expressing those concerns. And but in any event, so we have rising inflation, no doubt about it. What do you think the Fed is going to do? Eric Coffin was saying a little bit ago that people really need to be watching. I guess it's Thursday, or is it Wednesday? The Fed is going to be coming out.
It's usually Wednesday.
Yeah, but, so it must be this Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. Eric's at 11 o'clock Pacific, so that's 2 o'clock. It's about right, I guess. So I guess they're going. We'll be listening to he's expecting they're going to announce some tapering. But how long can this tapering go, John, before – I mean, it's like you say, volatility, and the people that run the world own stocks. I don't know.
Well, that's really the $100 trillion question, isn't it? How far can they go this time? Because they've tried to do this a couple of times in the past, right? Mm-hmm. They start to raise interest rates, or at least they start to let their balance sheet run off a bit. And the in every case in the past, the stock market has just totally blown up on them. And then the Fed panics and takes it all back and says, oh, you know, did we say we were going to tighten? Never mind. We're actually going to cut interest rates, and mm-hmm. you won't have to. See, I think this time around is the time when people realize that that's a permanent state of affairs, that there's yes. literally nothing the Fed can do to rein in inflation without blowing up the financial system, and they don't want to do that. So we're going to have to live with accelerating inflation, official inflation, as it's defined by the government and by individuals. You know, we've always had inflation over the last few decades, but it's been narrowly confined to stocks, bonds, and real estate. Now it's broadening out to everything else. And so we're going to have to live with it. So will people then start acting accordingly? I think they probably will. And I think we get something like the 1970s, only much, much bigger, because we were pretty healthy financially back in the 1970s.
Compared to now.
We're emphatically not financially healthy right now, which means any kind of crisis in the financial markets now risks metastasizing into a hyperinflation or a global depression. And the guys in charge of monetary policy know that, but they don't know what to do. You know, they don't have the 20% interest rates that Paul Volcker had back in the day to fix things. Mm-hmm. But they also understand that runaway inflation leads to the same place, right? It leads to a huge crash. And it seems that we're at the point now where that's really our choice. And it just remains for people to figure it out, and for that to become the meme, you know, the general consensus out there, that there is no fix and we're heading off a cliff one way or another, and what are you going to do? You know, and that's in the 1970s, that's when gold and silver really took off. You know, gold and silver were kind of choppy, but not up all that much mid-decade in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And they made their gigantic moves, these epic parabolic runs in the mm-hmm. last couple of years of the decade. That's mm-hmm. when people finally accepted that inflation was a real thing and it wasn't going away.
Right.
So we're headed for something like that, I think.
I think we are. The difference, as you pointed out, is that then we were strong enough economically. I mean, I don't know what our debt to GDP, the federal debt to GDP, or our total debt to GDP was much, much, much lower. I mean, now we're over 100%. I don't know. What do you have any idea? I can't remember without checking, but it was less than 60%, I think.
Oh, it was minuscule compared to today.
35 or 40% or something like that. And now we're
remember that,
over 100%.
That's just government debt. We have all kinds of other debt that has skyrocketed too. So total debt, especially if you include derivatives, are orders of magnitude higher than back then. So.
Well, speaking of derivatives, I just wonder to what extent the derivative markets, and Alistair MacLeod has talked about Basel III, and you know, January 3rd, I think it goes into effect for everyone, finally. And his thinking is that that's going to reduce the derivative markets very dramatically, and gold and silver, which has been probably a downward effect on those prices, and it will also affect, I think, other commodities where banks are no longer allowed to put those derivatives on their asset side of their balance sheet. So we'll see about that. But it's just going to be interesting. And what are your thoughts about gold? Because we're just not really seeing gold rise with the other prices, other commodities, even in terms of the money that's being created.
Well, the vast majority of people still believe the Fed that this is transitory, you know, that our current troubles are kind of something that will pass through. Yeah. And next year, things will go back to normal. Gold and silver will respond when people realize that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. You know, 6 months from now or what, or maybe tomorrow, who knows. People will realize that that this is just the new reality, and they'll be looking around for inflation hedges and safe haven assets, yada, yada. And gold and silver always do well in times like that. So the parabolic move will come, and as boring as it is now, this is still a really good time for the gold miners, because gold is high enough, even though it's not spiking, it's high enough to generate lots of free cash flow for the big mining mm-hmm. companies. Mm-hmm. So this is actually a good time for precious metals investors if you're picking the highest quality big gold miners, which will generate tons of free cash, and the best quality juniors, which will be bought out with that free cash at some point in the next few years. So all you really need to make money in the gold stock market is patience at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, patience sometimes hard to come by when you look at Bitcoin going up as it is and some of these other things. So you think maybe the time will come when people say, well, maybe Bitcoin doesn't really have the value. We know for sure that gold and silver is tangible. We can pick it up. We can use it. I mean, even a very interesting article recently in Venezuela where they're starting to use, in Bloomberg, had this article where they're starting to use actual people going out in the mines and or into the streams and picking up flakes of gold and using it to stay alive. I mean, it really is still true, even though it's hard for us to imagine in an advanced economy like the United States. But yeah, do you think that maybe eventually, sooner or later, people realize maybe Bitcoin doesn't really have any value?
Well, the cryptocurrency market is the dot-coms of the 1990s. Think of them that mm-hmm. way. You know,
yeah,
they're just rocketing, and every new one that comes out goes way up. And you know, a few of the dot-com companies survived and thrived. Amazon.com, for instance. So it could be that the best cryptos end up being very successful versions of whatever it is they are going forward, and most of the little no name coins end up failing, just like in the dot-com. So that's possible. But bubble markets are always the thing you look at and think, oh my God, whatever I have isn't as much as this, you know. But then when the bubble bursts, those things go back down. So it's completely possible that most of the cryptos can go down by 90% in the next big market crash. Highly unlikely that'll happen with gold and silver. You know, they'll be islands of stability in a sea of chaos. Cryptos may have a big role in the world going forward. That remains to be seen. They're very interesting. But I don't think they preclude gold and silver. You know, you definitely want something that's physical when things really get crazy, and only gold and silver are physical forms of money.
All right, we're just about out of time here, but a couple of other topics maybe quickly. Australia, interest rates, bond rates are rising very dramatically. Do you think the Reserve Bank of Australia is just letting it happen? Or what do you think is going on there?
That's what they did. They just stood back and didn't try to depress an interest rate. It was either the 3 or the 4 year note, I forget, or 2 or 3, one of those, kind of a medium short term note. But as soon as the central bank did not intervene, the interest rates spiked. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in a lot of countries. You know, the Canadian 5 year is up, the yield is up from 0.4% to 1.5% just this year. And mm-hmm. lots of other countries are seeing their interest rates spike. So that could be our future right there.
Well, and another topic we're not going to have time for are the elections in Virginia and New Jersey and elsewhere. We'll have to leave that for another time after we analyze the results and see what it might mean, John. We'd like to have you back on to talk about that perhaps sometime in the near future.
That'd
so we'll have to leave it go at that for now. Thank you so much, John, for being with us once again. Always a pleasure having you. Folks, next week we're going to have Lynn Alden with us and Michael Oliver returns. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Labrador Gold is an exploration company focused on its flagship Kingsway project, located in central Newfoundland Gold District. Labrador Gold's first phase drilling program has successfully identified high-grade gold mineralization, including a 3.6-meter intercept, grading 20.6 grams per ton gold, and 1.85 meters, grading 50.38 gram per ton gold. The company has approximately $35 million in the treasury and is led by a world-class team of CEO Roger Moss and technical advisors Sean Ryan and Quentin Henney.